through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Seahawks final injury report just came out. Two names ruled out. Russell Wilson, that won't surprise you, ruled out for this one. Running back Chris Carson also ruled out with a neck injury for this one. I'm going to give out the number and the line again. Then, Jake, just a quick reaction to that. So here's the question. You know Chris Carson's out. Chris Carson, not going to play this Sunday. Russell Wilson, obviously not going to play this Sunday. You're going to have Alex Collins, presumably, carrying the rock, your main running back. You're going to have Geno in for Russ. So who's got to step up? I mean, maybe your answer is Geno. Maybe your answer is like, hey, man, you're the backup quarterback. Get it done. Hey, Alex, you're the backup running back. Get it done. Maybe your answer is something else. Maybe you're saying, this person needs to do more. This guy on defense, this guy on offense, I want to see more from him. And he has to be the guy that this team needs. If there's a name you have in mind, I want you to call in. And we're going to turn it over to you guys. 206-421-3776. Again, who do you need to see step up for the Seahawks this weekend? You need to see a great game from him. 206-421-3776. Call right now. I am going to throw to our first caller in just 1 second. Jake, very, very quick reaction from you on Chris Carson being out.
Well, Chris Carson being out is a big blow. It is a big blow when you know that you have to go into Pittsburgh and you have to run the football. You have to do it effectively. You know that is the desire of Pete Carroll. He wants to see this be a very, very balanced attack. You want to protect Geno Smith as much as humanly possible so that it's not all on his shoulders. And this is a very good Pittsburgh Steelers defense that coming into this game is ninth in the NFL in rush defense. And although they are 18th in passing defense, they still have a very good unit that can get after the quarterback.
All right, going to our first caller here, Alvin in Renton. You can tell him from Renton. Alvin, who needs to step up for the Seahawks? Oh, do we have Alvin? No, Alvin left us. Can we jump to the next caller? Do you have him ready or just a minute? Okay, Curtis is getting his information, so give it a minute. You know, when I'm looking at, like, who needs to get stuff done, I am wondering if they change their approach a little bit to try to, I don't know, air it out a little bit more. I am curious to know what happens if they try to run with Alex Collins and they're getting nothing done. I want to keep that conversation going, but we just lost him again. Oh, no.
Jeez. Okay.
Okay. Well, let me give out the number. Sorry, guys. I keep accidentally doing this. 206-421-3776. 206-421-3776. I need to know who you are looking at this Sunday for the Seahawks saying this guy has to be at his best. Is it Bobby Wagner? Is it the league's highest paid safety? Is it Pete Carroll? Is it Ken Norton? I need to know who needs to get this done because you don't have Russ, and we just found out that you will not have Chris Carson this Sunday for the Seahawks, and that's going to be huge. Jake, I was saying I just wonder if they're going to air it out a little bit more.
Well, if they're going to air it out, I think it would be it wouldn't be ideal because I don't think Geno Smith is the guy that you want to go into that game, Sunday Night Football against the Pittsburgh Steelers and their defense, and try to air it out all over the yard. People already had their issues when Russell Wilson tried to do it. I don't think people are going to like the results if they try to do that with Geno Smith, and that's why I believe Pete Carroll is saying, hey, we are definitely not going to do that. We are going to try to be as balanced as humanly possible.
All right, going to Casey and Walla Walla. Casey, who needs to step up this Sunday?
I think DK Metcalf needs to step up.
Okay, why DK?
He hasn't had the best season yet. DK is an incredible wide receiver. And Geno, he really needs his support this week. With Chris Carson out, Alex Collins didn't have the best week either. DK, with his hands and going against Pittsburgh, if DK steps up, they could win. I think they could easily win the game with DK.
All right. Thanks, Casey. You know what? I was looking at DK's usage on that 98-yard drive. I have to think Geno Smith is looking for him when he needs someone to bail him out.
Well, I just more so believe than anything else that it just came with opportunity than it is necessarily him targeting DK. But, you know, I would say, you know, the early storyline about DK Metcalf not doing well, I think that's in the rearview mirror in DK's sense. you know, that experience, you know, the first couple weeks of kind of losing his cool and not, you know, keeping the focus on the play and trying to focus too much on the trash talk. He's really turned that around. And since that point, 25 receptions, 383 yards, and 5 touchdowns, he's off to a good start. And to Casey's point, though, he needs to have a big game. And I think that there are winnable matchups for DK Metcalf heading into this one. And this is an opportunity for, you know, Geno Smith to really target him heavily because he can be such a difference maker for any quarterback.
All right, everyone shout out Curtis Rogers for multitasking back there. When you call in, that's him on the other line trying to get you on here. Going to Brandon in Maple Valley. Brandon, who needs to step up this weekend?
Oh, without a doubt, it's Pete Carroll. Mm. Everybody is sitting around and talking about, you know, DK Metcalf, talking about Alex Collins. Metcalf has been nice. He still hasn't shown he can take over a game, with exception of a flash here or there. Bobby Wagner's done everything he possibly can do, especially at his age, to get this done. But the person who no one's talking about and the person that everybody sits here and ignores is the fact that we're watching a diminishing Pete Carroll. And this entire process has been happening for years. And Russell Wilson is an unfortunate problem. It's our worst nightmare. Mm. But at the end of the day, Pete Carroll's got to, you know, take another page out of a playbook that we haven't seen yet and figure out a way to get this team, you know, stimulated and get them, you know, all on the same page. Because honestly, outside of maybe Russell and Tyler Lockett, no one else is on the same page.
Now, Brandon, I'm curious to know what you think about this. Whenever I hear people talk about Pete, it's usually critiquing the offensive style, or maybe just that the defense is what it is, and he's a defensive-minded head coach. When you say, like, look, Pete's got to step up, what do you want to see more from? Is it just, like, a solution? I mean, what is it about Pete that you think, like, man, this is diminishing?
Yeah, no, well, first of all, you just said the whole key to this entire conversation.
Yeah.
You said he's a defensive-minded coach. Well, if you take a look at his numbers for the last 6 years or 7 years, I'm a New Yorker that's relocated out here into Washington for the last 6 years.
Sounds like it.
Couldn't tell. Couldn't tell at all.
Lost on me.
I know. I try to keep it in the closet. It just
don't do it. Don't do it. Let it out, man.
But at the end of the day, I lived through Geno Smith with the New York Jets for X amount of years, and I don't even want to say it on the air what I think about Geno Smith. So at the end of the day, you know, it's a nightmare. And it's Pete's worst nightmare because Russell's always been Pete's crutch. But right now, you just said it in our conversation, and that was that he's a defensive-minded coach. And there's been a lot of teams, including Pittsburgh, that have had quarterbacks hurt, quarterbacks go down, quarterbacks not themselves, and they've been able to get through it because they've had a great defense. That's the same as us. It's always been that way. But Pete didn't have a great defense. Pete had a great defense when the Legion of Boom was around. Since then, tell me what his defense has done from a numbers standpoint, from a comparative league standpoint. It's been on a decline for 8 years.
Brandon, you make a strong point. You make a strong case. Thank you for the call. We want to make sure we get to the other callers. But thank you for calling in. We'd love to have you call again.
Yeah, Brandon, call back anytime, my man.
Yeah, call back anytime. And don't suppress your East Coast accent, okay? It only enhances the conversation. But, you know, Brandon's point, this is an opportunity for, it's not just the players, but when Pete Carroll says, we've been addressing these issues, okay. Well, it's time to show that the issues have been addressed and that they will get fixed. And that is a big part of this equation. And if they're going to win football games over the next 3 weeks, it's going to be because of that defensive turnaround, or at least that the defense can keep this group afloat while during the time Russell Wilson is out. And I think Brandon is pointing to that as the challenge for this team right now.
I think that Pete Carroll has done such a phenomenal job of culture building and sustained success here in Seattle. And I'm sure there are points Brandon and I wouldn't agree on, but that was a great call. This is an endlessly entertaining conversation to me, or interesting. Maybe not entertaining because it's kind of depressing at points, but interesting conversation. I could talk about coaching styles all day. All right, going to Bill in Linwood. Bill, who's got to step up?
Yes. Hi. The defensive line needs to, because if we can't get pressure on Big Ben and force some three and outs to get the ball back and give our offense a chance, I think we're in trouble. So defensive line, come on, put some pressure on them.
Bill, I absolutely agree that the pass rush needs to be better. Is there any individual that you're looking at to step up from that group as a whole?
Yes, just mainly maybe turn Jamal Adams loose.
Okay.
That would really help. But
now, Bill, Jamal Adams isn't a defensive lineman. So are you saying that you want Jamal to lead the pass rush, or is there a defensive lineman in particular that you want to see play better?
No, just as a group.
Okay, okay.
To force some pressure. But just real quick, you guys, for Jake and Stacy, my mother is in Bellevue. She's 87 years old, lives in assisted living. She's a big fan, football fan, and you're the only show she will listen to. She loves you guys because your voice is very clear. You have great radio voices. And she said, Stacy and Jake, your voices are full of life and energy.
So she
loves you guys.
So, oh, my gosh.
What's her name? What's her name?
Her name is Ida.
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 She loves you guys.
Ida, yeah. You are the best. Thank you so much for being a fan of our show. We will absolutely, every time we come on the air, we will think of you, Ida. We are wishing the best for you. Bill, thank you for
the call.
Shout
out to Bill and Ida.
Thank you for the call there. You know how to butter us up, so we really appreciate it.
That's a pretty name.
But, you know, this is something that obviously that we've been pointing to, you and I, and we've been pointing to different people. You point to Carlos Dunlap. I point to Jamal Adams as two key figures as to how they've got to get this pass rush turned around. We know Daryl Taylor has been performing better, and hopefully he will continue to do so. But you can't just rely on the rookie to come up with a sack. You've got to have the group turn it up and to be more like the group that they were in the second half of last season than what we've witnessed so far to start.
All right, we have a couple of people waiting, so I want to try to get through these as quickly as we can. Going to Dwight in Issaquah. Dwight, who needs to step up? Line one.
Ken Norton.
All right, and why Ken Norton? I can guess, but why Ken Norton?
Because if you take a look at his record as a defensive coordinator, you'll see year after year after year, they get worse. Every defense he's coordinated has got worse except for one. Mm-hmm. That's because they were dead last the year before.
You know, Dwight, I got to tell you, man, thanks for the call. You're not the only person to call in about Ken. That was the most popular one that I was seeing on the text line from folks who can't call in saying, hey, I'm at work right now, but Ken Norton Jr. would be my answer first and foremost. So I have to tell you guys, now that we have Dwight's call, that was the most popular answer I was seeing.
It is the most popular answer, and it's the person that you point to the most. The hard part about that conversation is, as we talked about before, and as Brandon would point to, is, hey, whose defense is this? Is this Ken Norton Jr.'s defense, or is this Pete Carroll's defense? And that's part of the discussion, and I honestly can't tell you the power dynamic there is if, hey, I know people are pointing to Ken Norton Jr., and I think part of it is just show us some form of accountability. If this group is not going to perform well, we want to see some form of accountability. But I don't know if you're going to see that, because Pete Carroll is the one that is entrusting Ken Norton Jr. to carry out his style, what he sees, what he wants to do. And so that's why I think that when you have this conversation between Ken Norton Jr. and Pete Carroll and the defense as a whole, it's almost like those two need to be meshed together in that conversation, because I think they both share their responsibility for that, and it's not one or the other.
Sean in Spanaway, line five, Sean in Spanaway, who needs to step up?
Hey, I think really it's the tight end room. With Chris Carson out and Alex Collins, yeah, he's great. But what about that intermediate passing game? Break some stuff loose. We've got great guys with great hands. They can all block, right? The wide receivers are going to need some support. Let's get that intermediate passing game that Shane Waldron was supposed to bring. Let's see it.
Okay, Sean, I like it. Now, this is funny because when you talk about thank you for the call, because when you talk about them stepping up, the tight ends are sitting there. If Will Dissly and Gerald Everett and Colby Parkinson heard Sean, they'd be saying, hello, yes, we like that very much. We would love the opportunity to do so. And they're a group that is reliant on what's going on around them in terms of, you know, the quarterback looking for them. And also when it comes down to Shane Waldron, are they dialing up plays? And I think that ultimately is what Sean is talking about. It's not the lack of production. I don't see the tight ends making a bunch of mistakes getting themselves into bad situations, route running wise, or dropping the football, not at all. But this has been a group that has contributed when they've been targeted. And so can you get them more involved during this process. And I think that that's all something that we are going to greatly be interested in as Geno Smith's a quarterback over the next couple weeks.
Tyrese in Richland, line six. Tyrese, who needs to step up in Russell Wilson's absence this weekend?
It has to be on the defensive side of the ball, Jamal Adams. He needs to get pressure. If he can get a sack or two or a sack fumble, I think we should get out of there with the W. But we all know Pittsburgh's going to run the ball 20-plus times, so we're going to have to step the box. So he's going to be important in the run game as well as, you know, getting pressure. And if he can just play, you know, good defense on the ball when the ball's in the air, that's all we need him to do is just basic technique.
Now, Tyrese, I got to ask you, do we still have Tyrese? Tyrese, I got to ask you a question because this is the one of the top debates I see on the text line and on calls when people call in. I'm curious what you think. Are you someone who says, look, Jamal's a great weapon, we just aren't using him the right way right now and we need to get him more involved? Or are you someone who thinks they should never have done this contract?
After watching these first few weeks, I wish we'd never made the trade. Because I love draft picks, but if we use him right, he will be worth or almost worth what we paid him. So we just need to use him right. You know, he hasn't blitzed nearly as much as he did last year, and his on-ball coverage is just not there this year. For what reason, I don't know. It can't be the shoulder.
All right. Thanks, Tyrese. It is a really interesting topic. I think Jamal Adams is insanely talented. Again, Michael Sean Dugar of The Athletic was the first person to note this, and then I had his thought in mind when I went to training camp and then saw it. But there are certain guys when you see them on the field, and on a field full of premier athletes, you say, that guy is physically gifted. Like, that guy on a field full of professionals looks like one of the most physically gifted guys out there. Carlos Dunlap has been one of those guys. Even in his 30s, he looked like that at training camp. Daryl Taylor kind of has that body type. You didn't see, like, all the moments where you thought, oh, he's going to dominate. But he has a body type where I thought, like, that's a defensive end. And then Jamal Adams is one of those guys where you go out there and you think, like, I get it. I get why he was a top six pick.
Right, which is also part of the reason why it's very confounding as to why he's not better when the ball is in the air, because he is so athletically gifted. Like, he does not have any limits to him athletically. He's fast, he's fluid, he's instinctual. But when the ball is in the air, so far he has struggled in terms of being able to track the ball. And so that is something that you want to see change. But the other way, the true fact is, I believe that this is a usage problem. The usage and the way that you're using him, you can get more out of him if you allow him to get more cracks at doing what he does best. And that is being at the line of scrimmage and being a factor. And I think Tyrese made a great point, is he's going to have to be. He's going to have to be, for the simple fact that the Steelers are going to make it a point to try and run the football. They're going to make it a point to try and get that going, and Jamal Adams is going to have to be a big factor in
that. All right, speed round a little bit with these, Jake. Rob in Olympia. Rob, who needs to step up this weekend?
I think the offensive line. I feel like what's going to make or break Geno and Alex's game on the offense is going to be how well the offensive line holds up and plays. Dwayne and Gabe leading those guys up there.
All right. All right, thanks, Rob. Rob makes a really good point is, hey, when you're looking at, you know, the offense needs to step up, if you want to say Geno needs to be great, well, don't let Geno get hit. Don't let Geno be forced into making some mistakes. He's a bit more of a pocket passer. He's mobile. He can still move around, but give him good protection and you'll get the best Geno. Yeah. I like that call.
Yeah, I do too. It's a good point, and it's not just in the passing game. It's in the running game as well. You have to be able to take over the game. You have to be able to control the time of possession, and the offensive line is going to have their work cut out for them as they go up against T.J. Watt, Cam Hayward, and guys like Melvin Ingram. So they're going to have a battle on their hands, and we'll see if they can win it.
Lamont and Pasco. Lamont, who needs to step up this weekend?
To kind of piggyback off of what everybody else said, it's the pass rush and the defense. I mean, they got to change some things. Why aren't we utilizing Blair? You know, why don't you blitz him like you did in that game versus the Chargers in preseason?
Lamont, it's a great point, and it's something that as I was looking at what they were doing in training camp, they were very aggressive, and part of me looks at it, and I'm curious now as if it was something that they were, you know, flirting with, and the ideas that they were flirting with and seeing if they could do it. And maybe they thought to themselves, gosh, maybe
But why not end up sticking with that?
Maybe,
I mean, this is
maybe
a,
we don't
above
have the
my pay grade.
Maybe they don't have the cornerback group to be able to handle that responsibility of being in man-to-man coverage as much. But they were doing a lot of cool things when it came to free safety blitz or safety blitzes with Jamal Adams, even Quandre Diggs, getting Marquise Blair involved. They've got the skill position group or the not skill position group. They've got the talent between Marquise Blair, as Lamont is pointing out, Jamal Adams, to really come up with a pressure package that's really unique and dynamic. The only problem with that, guys, is it sounds nice in theory, but what you're leaving yourself exposed to is open voided zones in your fire zone coverage when you don't get home. And the problem that this group has had is communication errors. And in order to be very good in those fire zone blitzes, which means you're still playing zone coverage behind the blitzes that you're sending in, is that you have to have great communication and everybody knows what they're supposed to be. And so I believe that's a big reason why you have not seen that play out so far this season.
Woody and Mukilteo. Woody, who needs to step up?
Hey, guys, love the show. Thank you. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. What you got for us?
I think it's Lockett. I think Lockett's going to be huge on
third that's
down,
a new one.
Especially the short passes from Geno. I think that's going to be really big, is getting those short passes, you know, getting Geno comfortable and just letting him know that, man, he's got Lockett wherever he needs him, especially on whatever down. And then, Jake, I have a question for you.
Yeah, what you got?
Do you think this injury is kind of like a blessing in disguise, you know, with, you know, Russell, the way he holds on to the ball so long? Do you think it would change his timing and getting rid of the ball sooner when he comes back? Much, guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks, Woody.
Woody, I love your answer about Tyler Lockett. Everybody looks at, you know, DK Metcalf for the tight ends, but Tyler Lockett is a security blanket. He was for Russell Wilson. There's no reason why he shouldn't be the same guy for Geno Smith. And then to answer your question, sometimes when it comes to those things, it you know, Russ being able to sit back and watch from a coach's perspective might reveal some things to him in terms of how exactly the offense is working and the way that Shane Waldron is thinking and how it manifests itself on game day. So it can give you a different perspective. And there's no doubt about it. But, you know, I don't think that it's going to be this monumental light bulb moment that everybody might anticipate, or Woody, that you're implying for Russell Wilson. And aha, now I see how the quarterback should operate in this offense. I think that that Russell obviously has been an elite quarterback. He's been very good in this league and has been very successful. And there may be some things that he might be able to look at and say, all right, I saw how this set up and the way that Waldron was trying to call it here, and I might be able to get something useful out of that. But I don't think as a wholesale change, Russell's going to come back and operate as a completely different quarterback.
All right, that'll do it for our callers today. Ray, Tony, Chris, my apologies to you guys that we didn't get to you. I am so sorry, but I am positive you guys had great calls. So I'll shout you out right now, Ray, Tony, and Chris, for calling in. Appreciate you guys a lot. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Kings Heating and Air. Weekly game show coming up next. If you like trivia, if you like game shows, and if you're ready for another preview for week 6, well, I got you covered. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Welcome.
Steelers.
Get it? Steel drums.
This is stupid.
No, it's not. You know what's stupid is talking over the intro, Stacey.
I was just prepared to. This is a dumb. This doesn't make any sense. God.
Steel drums, the Steelers.
Yeah. It
makes all the sense in the world.
I'm so sorry.
Here
we go.
It is our weekly game show.
Can
getting
you guys
stop
fighting, please?
Getting you guys ready for the upcoming game. This one is a Week 6 Sunday night matchup between the Seahawks and Steelers. It is going to be a trivia face-off between Curtis and Jake. The series for the season, we've done 4 of them, is currently tied 2-2. You can participate on the text line if you want, but Jake, Curtis, as you know, neither of you are allowed to look at the text line for this one. So we'll start with Jake. Jake, true or false? The Seahawks and Steelers have never played each other for Sunday night football.
Sunday night football? False.
What? They've never played each other for Sunday night football.
Really?
Yeah.
That game back in 2015 was a day game?
It was. It started late. And it was like a 1:25 kickoff, but the game went super late. The sun went down.
You hate to see it.
Yeah. I remember about that game was it basically being under the lights and Okay. All right.
Next question.
Sunsets early.
This is a zero one. This is a good Curtis question. It's a little long. It's a new series I'm introducing, or a new type of question called Who Am I? I'm going to give you context clues for a player's performance in a game against the Steelers, and you are going to guess the Seahawks player. Okay? Who am I? It was the single best game performance against the Steelers by any Seahawks wide receiver. On just 6 receptions, I racked up 145 yards and 3 touchdowns. Seattle had a 2-point lead with 2 minutes remaining, and there was a heart-stopping moment when the quarterback fumbled the ball at his own 20-yard line, though it was quickly recovered. Then, one play later, I caught a quick 10-yard pass and ran it all the way into the end zone for an 80-yard score.
Oh, come on.
Jake, you know. Can't steal it. Curtis.
Is the answer Doug Baldwin?
Yeah, the answer is Doug Baldwin.
Jeez.
That was in that that was in that 2015 stretch when they just the two of them Wilson and Baldwin just absolutely took off. Wow, what a shame.
Game.
Curtis up 1-0, Jake. Here you go. Jake, which of the following players leads the Steelers in receptions? Wide receiver Chase Claypool, wide receiver Deontay Johnson, or running back Najee Harris?
This is actually going to surprise a lot of people. It's running back Najee Harris.
It is. Jake tying it up 1-1. Curtis, you have a related question. Which of the following players leads the Steelers in touchdowns? Wide receiver Chase Claypool, wide receiver Deontay Johnson, or running back Najee Harris?
Deontay Johnson.
Correct. Curtis with a 2-1 lead on Jake. Jake.
Yes.
Who led the Steelers in passing yards the last time these two teams met?
Say that one more time.
Who led the Steelers in passing yards the last time these two teams, Seahawks and Steelers, played each other?
Oh. Big Ben got hurt in 2019. Who played in that game? Oh man,
Curtis, do you know?
It's either between it's either Mason Rudolph or Devlin Hodges, and I'm trying to narrow that down. And I'm going to go with Mason Rudolph.
Correct. Jake ties it up.
Oh man, that one had me nervous.
Proud of you guys, Curtis. How old were you in February of 2005? Remind me.
I was 14 years old.
Okay. Who performed the halftime show at Super Bowl 40?
That'd be the Rolling Stones.
Correct. I knew that some people would be like, what an easy question, but Curtis was a young child.
Actually, I was 13 back then. Didn't turn 14 until
13
April.
Years old.
Yeah.
Jake, I don't want you to overthink this one. It clearly doesn't have anything to do with the Steelers,
okay.
But it was. Shout out to Seahawks PR in their little PR handout this week.
Mm-hmm.
Jake, only one NFC team has more home wins than Seattle since 2002. Who is it?
The Pittsburgh Steelers?
No. Only one NFC team has more.
NFC.
NFC team.
Sorry.
One NFC team has more home wins than Seattle since 2002. Who is it?
Since 2002. Man.
You've got some time.
Do I? Do I have some time?
I mean, I'm judging you as every second passes, but if you're comfortable with that.
Is it the New Orleans Saints?
No. Curtis, you don't get the point, but you want to take
the Green
a shot.
Bay Packers?
It's the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah.
All right, Curtis.
They were my second guess.
I can win.
You can
right
seal
here.
It right here. Let's see. Do I want to, and how do I want to do this? Name two players who have played for both the Seahawks and Steelers.
Franco Harris.
Yes.
And Chad Brown.
I thought you'd say Akello Witherspoon.
Oh,
other
yeah.
potential answers of recent examples include Nick Vinette and BJ Finney. So Curtis wins this round. Now, Jake, Curtis won.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't miss.
You didn't miss. No, you were
not a single miss.
You were
played a perfect
four.
Game.
4 for 4. Perfect game. You guys get 8 questions.
Wow.
And,
nice
yeah.
job.
Yeah. Now, can I tell you guys what the tiebreaker would have been?
Sunday night question.
Yes. What would the tiebreaker
be? Okay. So, if you guys ever listen to the show, and I forgive you if you don't, the game show that we do, we almost always get to the tiebreaker because there's only 8 questions. Mm-hmm. These guys each spend all week talking about this game, and they get 4 shots to get things right. So often we go to a tiebreaker. And normally it'll be something like, okay, go back and forth naming, you know, players who have played for both the Steelers and Seahawks, or go back and forth naming coaches who have coached for both the Steelers and Seahawks. Something where you guys can go back and forth until someone doesn't get it.
Yeah.
For this one, I made custom questions.
Custom questions.
Custom questions. So for this one, it was going to be Jake has his own set of questions. Curtis has his own set of questions.
Okay, what were they?
And whoever got the first question wrong was going to lose. So the first one was going to be, yours is all idioms.
Idioms? Great.
Jake, this was going to be your first tiebreaker question.
This is so mean.
Which is correct? For all intents and purposes or for all intensive purposes?
For all intensive purposes.
No. Curtis. Curtis, this would have been yours. Which manager, this is courtesy of funtrivia.com.
Not cool.
Which manager set a National League regular season record for being ejected 13 times?
Bobby Cox.
No, but no. That was one of your 4 choices. I didn't get a read yet. So then it would go back to Jake, and I would have said, Jake, finish the sentence. Nip it in the blank.
Bud.
Okay. So then Curtis, this is so great. I think it would have been a great time. Jake looks so mad. Jake, you got the second one right. Is it biding my time or biting my time?
Biding my time.
Okay. It was really just the intensive purposes that really, I knew that would be the best one. Well, Jake, you got it. Don't worry. Not the trivia game. Curtis won this week. But you got your first extra question that didn't count at all towards your score. So everyone wins, except for you. Curtis did this week. All right. What I need to know is coming your way next. You guys already know how it works. Get your question in, any question you want, to the Mac and Jack's text line 206-421-3776. Any question, turning it over to you guys one last time on Jake and Stacey next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
It's What I Need to Know, brought to you by All Red Heating, Cooling, Electric. It's how we close out every single show. It's Jake and Stacey, turning it over to you guys for some final questions from the 907. We'll start
there's
right here.
There's 0 questions here. We are just getting, I am getting shredded,
Jake,
here.
People
the
are.
The 415. No. I feel bad. I feel bad. Poor Jake. He looks down on the bumps. Okay. All right.
Okay, Jake, this is a serious question. Okay. No one's making fun of you anymore. Serious question.
Sure.
From the 907, can the defense lean their hat on stopping the Steelers' cowbell or Claypool, their jack of all aces wide receiver one?
Well, if you go into
that all makes sense though.
It does. I don't see the problem. Look, to answer the question, I believe that the Seahawks are more capable of slowing down their passing game than they are the running game at the current moment. And I know that's going to come to a shock to a lot of people. Because when you look at, I think the passing issues have covered up a lot of the glaring issue of the fact that their run defense has not been as good.
You mean like they've been so bad with one thing that you haven't realized that there are other issues?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, the Steelers are definitely going to test them, and I'll be curious to see how committed they stay to the running game. The Rams tried to do it in the first half of the game, and then they realize, like, why would we do that? We're having way too much success through the air, so we're just going to continue to bomb it in the second half. And they were successful, and I think that they would have been even more successful had they stayed with it in the second half. But we'll see what the Steelers' approach is, and obviously the first half is going to be one where you're going to trade blows, and you're going to see who, you know, everybody's going to be feeling each other out and making the adjustments based off of that. But the run defense is going to have to step up in this
game. I think you do as much as you can to stop Harris, because this team has not been great when he hasn't been going, and it's not a coincidence that their best game was when he had over 100 yards. And Claypool can take off. I mean, when Harris had 122 last week, Claypool had something like 170 or some insane number because he was able to get going and they had a nice balanced attack. If Roethlisberger has to throw it like 35-plus times, even if Claypool's getting involved, there's more opportunities there for guys like DJ Reed, guys like Quandre Diggs to make some picks. From the 206, Mariners question here. What I need to know, what do they do, the Mariners, with Evan White now that France has showed he can play first well enough and hits a million times better?
Well, I mean, what you do and what they've said is no one has a spot that is etched in stone. Like, there is nobody that you can look at outside of, like, J.P. Crawford and Mitch Haniger if he doesn't get traded, which we would riot if that would be the case.
I think at this point, after that article, people would be like, is it because of the article?
Yeah, people can jump on the bandwagon of what we've been talking about for quite some time now. But I think that when you're talking about Ty France specifically, I think he's earned that first base job just through his play alone. And Evan White, my best case scenario, outside of him being used to bring somebody else in a trade or being packaged in that situation, is him, you know, starting with the AAA club and him potentially being, you know, brought up as Cal Raleigh did. Give him opportunities, give him more at bats, allow him to develop, give him the development that he didn't get because he was rushed up here at the plate, and you'll see him potentially maybe being used as a utility guy in the second half of the season. That would be the best case scenario, but I don't know if you're going to get to that point.
If he's used as a utility guy, he can only be a first base outfield type because he's a left-handed thrower. So it would be very tough for him to play third base or anything like that.
Right.
Which, I mean, first base outfield, there is a market for that. Jake Bowers, he was a first base outfielder type. But Evan White hasn't really played outfield. But look, you can teach somebody to play outfield. I would imagine it's not too difficult. But Evan White's athletic. We know that. Mm-hmm. Like, so there is a possibility that first base may not be Evan White's long-term home, at least on the Mariners roster. Now, if somebody else wants to make a trade for him, make him their first baseman of the future, I'm for it. But Ty France is your starting first baseman opening day.
Without question.
Absolutely.
Without question.
From the 206, what I need to know, Curtis, is Willa sleeping better? You seem more crisp today on the game show. Oh,
thank you. Yeah, actually, she is. She's gotten past that four-month regression that they talk about in all those parenting books. Jake knows it. We're on month five now. She turned 5 months Aww. Old back on the 12th.
Right now, Brooke and I are shaking in our boots knowing that we have the four-month sleep regression
coming
up with River.
Yikes.
It is
going to be fun.
It is brutal.
At least your guys' babies are super cute.
That's true.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Here's a question for Jake from the 253, Leo in the 253. If Gino rocks the house, wins out, do you let Russ cook on the bench till he's 100%? I think it would be a yes for me.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to rush him to come back if they're doing just fine, but you're also not going to sit him on the bench if he wants to come back. I mean, that idea is just not going to happen. So, I mean, Russ will come back when he's ready, and I don't anticipate him, you know, really putting himself in a bind physically. When he comes back, it'll be because he's 100%, not because he's 80% or 90%, unless they really, really need him and their playoff chances are razor thin at that point. But I just really don't see in this situation that Russell's gonna not come back when he's 100%. I think that's always going to be the plan.
This texter wanted to know, what about Ty France at third and moving White back to first? Because he can't play.
I don't see the point in having Evan White in the starting lineup when he can't.
Why force the issue?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I think there's still a lot of people that think, oh, he's such a spectacular first baseman.
Yeah, he is. But you need, when you have, how do people have this logic? We need to lengthen our lineup. We need to get better offensively. You know what will help? Let's put Evan White in, who's barely batting over 100, or he's around 150, wherever the heck he is. But how does that logic make any sense to people out there because of the promise? He's got to show it. You've got to allow him to develop. Like, gosh.
By the way, you know who the best defensive first baseman in the American League was this last year?
Ty France.
It was Ty France.
And he can hit.
Jake, I see there's a lot of pressure boiling to the surface.
We cannot leave without this thought on Friday.
Yeah.
Love is Blind auditions are coming to Seattle.
Wow.
Stacy.
I have a boyfriend. His name is Brian, and he's real.
That's right.
He's real. You guys
haven't
met him yet.
We need to have a conversation that Brian is gone way too long.
He's just
working. You need to audition for Love is Blind The people out there, I think, all want to see that happen.
Okay, you and Brooke want to watch that, and Brenna and Curtis want to watch it, and all four of you are going to die laughing.
Well, 100%, but Stacey, yeah. I mean, come on, for the clout.
Like, for the clout.
Come on, you got to do it.
For the clout, you're right, you're right. All right, that'll do it for us today, for this week, you guys. Don't go anywhere, though. We already told you Chris Carson is out for this one. Wyman and Bob are coming up next, and Pete Carroll is going to be speaking with reporters at 2 p.m., so I'm sure they'll have some updates for you. Do not go anywhere. Until then, for Curtis Rogers, for Jake Heaps, I'm Stacey Ross. This has been Jake and Stacey on 710 ESPN Seattle.